The record will reflect all jurors are present. Counsel are present. Who is the next witness?
Kevin Gunderson.
Very well. Kevin Lee Gunderson, plaintiff's witness herein, testified as follows.
Thank you. Please take the witness stand. Would you please state your full name and spell your last name for the record?
Yes, my full name is Kevin Lee Gunderson.
Could you spell your last name, please?
Gunderson.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Dr. Gunderson.
Good afternoon.
What is your present employment?
I'm a principal scientist at Illumina.
When did you first start working at Illumina?
It was October 1st, 1998.
Prior to joining Illumina, you were employed by a company called Affymetrics?
That's right.
Who was your boss at Affymetrics?
Mark Chi for the first year.
And when you joined Illumina in October of 1998, who was your boss then?
Mark Chi.
And how long did Mark Chi continue to be your immediate supervisor at Illumina?
He was my immediate supervisor up until, I think, last Friday.
Okay. Now, you were the principal scientist with respect to the coding experiment called the 768 decoding experiment?
I led the decoding effort. It was a collaborative product between chemistry, bioinformatics, and molecular biology.
You were the lead scientist on the decoding efforts?
On the decoding side.
The actual decoding was run under your direction and supervision?
Yes.
Now, the 768 decoding experiments, there were actually two experiments run in the year 2000. Is that right?
Yeah, there were a couple separate experiments that we tried to decode 678 B types.
Both were conducted under your supervision?
Yes.
When did the first 768 decoding experiment begin?
That was in the spring of 2000.
Do you happen to recall the month?
It was probably April or May at the latest.
Now, this first 768 decoding experiment didn't work, did it?
No, the intensities were too low to really get good results.
The results from the first 768 decoding experiments were so poor that you couldn't get any meaningful data, correct?
That's correct, and I thought they would be poor. The bead intensities at that time were too low. Chemistry hadn't perfected the immobilization chemistry at that time.
Let's take a look at Exhibit 269. This is an email from Mark Chi sent on July 13, 2000. You have seen this earlier in the case, Dr. Gunderson.
Yes.
Mark Chi refers to having, by July of 2000, having tested two different sets of 768 beads. Those were the two 768 decoding experiments, right?
I'm not sure what he's referring to. I will have to read it again.
Referring to this language here, by July 13th of 2000, he states, we've now tested two different sets of 768.
Yeah, I'm not sure what he's referring to there.
Well, the only two sets of 768 bead experiments that you are familiar with by July 13th of 2000 would have been the first experiment that you've already described, and then the one that was done in the summer, right?
Yeah, we tested subsets of the 768 prior to that. We had modeled 16 that were based on both 768 series that had worked.
And the first set of 768, that experiment just didn't work.
Intensities were too low on average.
You'd agree the experiment didn't work, correct?
No, there was certainly, we knew where improvement needed to be done, and from our side, we went ahead with that improvement.
And again, no meaningful data from the first 768 experiment?
Well, all data is meaningful in some sense. It tells you something. I wouldn't say the data wasn't meaningful. It's meaningless in the sense you didn't accomplish what you wanted to accomplish.
The results were so poor from that first experiment you couldn't rely on the data. Is that correct?
No.
Is it correct or incorrect?
You couldn't rely on the data. I wouldn't use my data for choosing my sequences in the screen.
The second 768, when did that begin?
The planning for it began in the beginning of June of 2000. The decoding itself was actually conducted in July of 2000. But prior to that, a lot of preparation of reagents was being undertaken.
Okay.
Basically from the month of June, first week of July or so.
Now, How many colors, Dr. Gunderson, were used in the 768 decoding experiment?
There were actually three colors used. We were planning on using four colors, but in the end, we only used three colors.
Let's take a look, please, at Exhibit 257. Exhibit 257 is a copy of an email from Mark Chi dated June 30th of 2000. It states, Kevin's group will do a two-color decoding with the 768 codes next week. You never did two-color decoding in the summer of 2000, did you?
No. Mark was under the impression that we might do two-color, and that was our fallback position. We would have done two-color, but we thought three-color would do the same job.
You weren't even planning on doing two-color decoding at that point in time, were you?
No, we discussed it. It was an option.
Let me read from your deposition testimony. Do you recall having your deposition taken in this case?
Yes, I do.
You gave sworn testimony in that deposition?
Yes.
I'm going to read your deposition at page 70, where I asked you specifically about this June 30th, 2000 event, and your testimony was as follows. And in Mark Chi's email, it states that Kevin's group will do a two-color decoding with the 768 codes next week. Did you? Did you do two-color decoding at about that time?
No.
Is there any particular reason why you did not?
We did three-color.
So is it your belief that that's a typo or that there was a change in plans?
I can't speak for Mark. I wasn't planning on doing two-color decoding.
So does that refresh your recollection, sir, that you were not planning to do any two-color decoding?
No. I may have discussed two-color with Mark. We discussed a lot of things, but, you know, I make my own decisions in the end.
And you weren't planning on doing two-color decoding, were you?
No. I made the decision that three colors should work.
Now, the three colors that were actually used in the 768 decoding experiment, could you tell us what those colors were?
Well, I can tell you the particular dye, but we refer to them as blue, green, and red. But those are, you just refer to them. Their spectral colors are roughly those, but...
Okay. So for ease of convenience, we will call them blue, green, and red.
Yes.
Okay. And when the decoding experiments are done, the beads are actually painted or coated with one-third blue, one-third green, and one-third red. Is that right?
Roughly, that's the case. You can see it out among the exhibits there, but yeah.
And I take it it's important in doing decoding to track the colors that are used to tag individual beads?
Yeah, that's how we do our decoding. We attach a unique color signature to each bead type, which tells us what the bead is.
Okay. Could we please take a look at Exhibit 354? Exhibit 354 is a copy of a memo from Kevin Gunderson to Mark Chi, dated July 12th of 2001. And this is a memo you wrote, isn't that right?
That's correct.
And this memo concerns the 768 decoding experiment that was conducted in the summer of 2000?
That is correct.
So you wrote this memo approximately a year after the experiment was conducted?
Yes.
Mark Chi asked you to write this memo, true?
Yeah, he asked me to write a memo reviewing the 768 experiment from the year, the summer before.
Did he say why? Did Mark Chi say why he wanted you to write a memo about this experiment about a year after the experiment was conducted?
No, he didn't say why. I didn't ask him. And I have no idea why it was being written.
He's your boss. He tells you to write a memo, you write a memo, right?
Pretty much.
And in the summary section of the memo, I take it you summarized the 768 decoding experiment.
Yeah.
And you wrote in your memo, in the summary section, quote, "The quality and accuracy of the data may have been somewhat compromised by the mix-up in a lot of the dye from molecular probes."
That's correct.
That's your belief, sir.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Did you report to Dr. Chi, back in the summer of 2000, that the quality and accuracy of the data may have been somewhat compromised by the mix-up in the dye lot?
Yeah, I did discuss that with him.
Back in the summer of 2000?
That's right.
You are aware, sir, that there were some vials of dye used in the 768 decoding experiment that were mislabeled.
That's correct. There were. We usually mixed a large number of vials together in order to do a labeling. They were all labeled the same, but what was actually in the bottle was different than what it said on the label.
Okay. Which color was missing?
There were a series of vials that were labeled with the color green, and a subset of them actually had red, so-called red dye, in them.
So the label said green, but there was actually red inside the vials?
That's right.
And the mislabeled dyes were actually used in the experiment, right?
Correct.
Now, Dr. Gunderson, as a scientist, you were concerned when you learned about the mislabeled dyes, weren't you?
Naturally.
Because you thought it compromised the data?
Well, it reduced the quality. I knew as soon as I saw the data that the separation wasn't as good as I had expected from some earlier studies, but I didn't know the reason for it at that moment.
Is it correct, sir, when you were conducting this experiment, you knew something was wrong, and then when you found out about the mislabeling, that explained what was wrong?
That's right. Looking at the data, I immediately knew that it wasn't of the quality that I had expected.
And when you found out about this mislabeling of the dye, you thought that explains it?
That's right.
Now, when you found out about the mislabeling, you questioned in your own mind whether you could have confidence in the accuracy of the data from this experiment. Is that right?
I had confidence. I questioned, you know, what the robustness of the assay would be, whether we could really be confident that the sequences we screened would behave well in a manufacturing setting where this was actually, you know, destined for. So, yeah, I planned further experiments, but in fact, I could see the separation visually, so I knew we could still decode, nonetheless, hundreds of bead types.
When you found out about the mislabeling, you questioned the accuracy of the data, true?
Of course. I'm a scientist. I question everything.
In fact, sir, you still question whether the data from that experiment was accurate because of the mislabeling, don't you?
Yes. From those 500 bead types, I actually selected 150 bead types confidently, and we went forward with those subsequent to this experiment.
But as you sit here today in this courtroom before this jury, you still question in your own mind whether the data from the 768 decoding experiment was accurate.
On every last bead type, you know, I wouldn't vouch for the accuracy, but for the general gist of the experiment, my conclusions were completely justified.
Let me read some of your deposition testimony on this point, sir. Beginning at page 87, line 16. Did you question whether the mislabeling of the dye might call into question the reliability of the scientific data?
I didn't question the overall, you know, conclusions in the experiment, but I questioned, you know, the accuracy and robustness of the data.
In fact, you still question the accuracy of the data due to the reagent problem.
Yes.
Do you stand by that testimony?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't throw those 517 beads or whatever they are into production.
After discovering the mix-up, the mislabeling of the dye, you immediately stopped using mislabeled dye?
That's right.
And you immediately started planning to redo the experiment, correct?
We didn't redo the full experiment. We actually went back and started reworking our process.
But you started... Strike that. When you found out about the mislabeling of the dye, you started planning a new experiment that wouldn't use the mixed-up dye.
Yeah.
Did you talk to Mark Chi about that?
Yeah, we were in close communication all the time, so most of the things I did, I discussed with him.
You did discuss that with him in the summer of 2000, correct?
Yeah.
The dyes that were actually used in that experiment, they were used by molecular biologists, correct?
They were used by biologists of all sorts and types. Went through the biologist tests, they were used by chemists.
In terms of attaching the dye to the decoding oligos that were used in this experiment?
Yes.
That was done by a molecular biologist named Mark Schneebaum.
Yeah, we did the attachment.
Did anyone check the dye vials to do a quality check before they were used in the 768 experiment to be sure what was inside the vial was what was put on the label?
No, we didn't check it. We took the manufacturer's word for it. In fact, most scientists still don't check every bottle they get.
In retrospect, you believe you would have been checking the dyes.
If there was that much risk of a mix-up, yeah, it would have helped a lot.
In retrospect, as you sit here today, you believe you should have been QCing, quality control checking, true?
Well, in light of what happened, yes.
Let's look at Exhibit 269. Okay, this is the email that we had looked at previously. Scroll down a little. Scroll up to the top. Dr. Chi testified that he forwarded a PowerPoint, at least one PowerPoint slide, maybe more, to the roadshow team, and testified that this blow-up I'm about to show was one of the slides that he forwarded to the roadshow team. And again, this is the slide with an alumina bait stamp, number IL-1560. Let me move it back a little bit. It's not a great view, but can you see it?
Yes.
Okay. Dr. Gunderson, you made this slide, is that right?
That's correct.
Mark Chi asked you to make this slide.
That's correct.
Mark Chi asked you to prepare a slide that he wanted to send to the roadshow team, true?
That was my understanding.
He said he wanted this slide for the roadshow team?
I believe he was going to send it on, yeah.
That's what he told you, didn't he?
Something to that effect.
Do you recall that Mark Chi told you that he wanted to make a slide for the roadshow? Sort of a pretty picture slide?
Yeah, something like this.
Is that what he said?
It was 2 years ago. I don't remember his exact words, but yeah, something to that effect.
All right. Just for the record, I will read in your testimony because I believe you did use that phrase at deposition. Page 98, line 1. And what did Dr. Chi tell you in terms of why he wanted you to make up a slide?
I think he told me he wanted to make a slide for a roadshow, sort of a pretty picture slide.
Is that pretty much what he told you?
Yeah, that's a pretty picture.
It's colorful?
Yeah.
Now, the point, strike that, what were you trying to depict on this slide was to show visually that you could see different colors on beads as a result of the decoding process?
That's right.
And you testified earlier that the three colors you used were blue, green, and red.
That's correct.
How many different colors do you see in this pretty picture?
I see roughly blue, green, red, and there's sort of a greenish yellow or maybe even a white. And, of course, the black spaces where there are no beads.
So you see green, red, blue, yellow, white, and black.
Yeah.
And yet there were only three colors used in the experiment.
Correct.
Do you recall, Dr. Gunderson, that you left on a vacation on this very day, July 13th, 2000, and Mark Chi sent his email to the roadshow team?
Yeah, I went on vacation then.
Were you aware when you went on vacation that Mark Chi had sent your slide on to the roadshow on that day?
I was unaware of what he did with it once I sent it to him.
Dr. Gunderson, when you left on vacation on this day, July 13th of 2000, you believed that the results were too preliminary as of that date for you to have any confidence in the number of bead types that could be decoded, true?
Well, at that time, yeah, I didn't know what... I mean, this was part of a screening exercise. We wanted to make good sequences, so I was very concerned about the quality and the intensity of the brightness of each sequence. That was a primary concern. So I wanted to make sure the screening exercise was worth our time.
When you left on vacation on this day, July 13th, 2000, you didn't have any confidence in the number of bead types that could be decoded as of that day, true?
I hadn't had enough time to look at the data, you know.
Dr. Gunderson, is it correct that you couldn't draw any conclusions with regard to the number of beads that could be accurately decoded as a result of the 768 decoding experiment?
Objection.
The one that was conducted in the summer of 2000?
Objection, vague and ambiguous as to what he means by accurate.
Sustained.
Accurate means correctly decoding individual beads, true?
Accurate. Yeah, that's the definition of accurate. You correctly decode a bead type.
You got it right, yes?
Yes.
So is it your sworn testimony, sir, that you could not, you were the principal scientist, you could not draw any conclusions with respect to the number of bead types that could be accurately decoded as a result of this experiment, the 768 decoding experiment?
It's not quite true. Looking at the image, I could actually distinguish at least three colors. And that made me confident that the decoding was still working. Although, you see, when you mix some of the red and the green, you get yellow. And that can be caused by the mixing up and dye. But nonetheless, Red is still distinguishable from the greenish-yellow, so I knew that decoding was working at some level.
But you couldn't reach any conclusions as to the number of bead types that could be accurately decoded as a result of this experiment, true?
I didn't actually do... Bioinformatics did the data analysis. They were reaching the conclusions. I wasn't. I just looked at the data, and it looked reasonable in terms of being able to classify three different clusters or colors, if you can visually distinguish these colors by eye. The computer element that was used by informatics can do a better job than that, so there's no doubt that we would get three clusters and decoding would occur.
I'm simply asking about your conclusions, if any. There did come a point in time, sir, that you did reach a conclusion about the number of bead types that could be accurately decoded as a result of the 768 decoding experiment, right?
Our bioinformatics department reached a conclusion.
They didn't reach... Strike that. You didn't reach any conclusions about this until the experiment was redone after the roadshow, true?
I was careful with my conclusions.
So is the answer no? The question is, isn't it true, sir, that you... Dr. Kevin Gunderson didn't reach any conclusions about the number of beads that could be accurately decoded as a result of the 768 bead experiment until after the experiment was redone, after the roadshow.
No. Bioinformatics recorded they had 317 bead types. I will take their word for that. The question about accuracy is mostly reproducibility. You can't really talk about reproducible until you decode that bead type again and again and again to show that most of that bead type is decoding. You might be able to decode a bead type, but only be able to decode the top 10% of the beads of that particular bead type. And those may be decoded accurately, but you've thrown away 90% of the beads that were also unacceptable. Although the decoding might have been accurate if you were only decoding a small fraction of the bead types, that was unacceptable. We were concerned with accuracy, the total number of beads, decoding robustness, so forth. With one experiment, I wouldn't be able to draw all those conclusions that it was accurate, robust, and we were decoding most of the bead types.
I'll come back to your question about accuracy in a minute. Let me follow up on something you said. How many different types of beads in total were used during the 768 decoding experiments, bead experiment in the summer of 2000?
In a typical array, I think these were 20, 30,000 bead types. We had four different arrays with 768 different bead types and looked for concordance among four arrays in terms of decoding.
But on one array, you had 20 or 30,000 different beads?
Something on that order.
And to get any meaningful results, you had to basically throw away a huge percentage of the beads, right?
No, Baram has that data.
Who has that data?
Baram. He's the one that analyzed the data.
Baram Kermani?
Correct.
You understood that most of the beads were essentially thrown away or ignored in the analysis, don't you?
No, I don't understand that. I thought most of the beads were analyzed and decoded, at least 50-60% of them, at least.
Let me come back to your testimony at deposition with respect to conclusions, if any, that you reached about the accuracy of the decoding. I want to read your testimony from your deposition at page 102, beginning at line 18. Your testimony was as follows. But did you personally reach any conclusions as a result of the data generated from the 768 decoding experiment in terms of the specific number of beads that Illumina could decode?
I'm sorry, counsel, are you reading at line 11?
Page 102, line 18.
Sorry, go ahead.
Let's begin this passage again. But did you personally reach any conclusions as a result of the data generated from the 768 decoding experiment in terms of the specific number of bead types that Illumina could decode?
When you say the 768 decoding experiment, you mean this particular one? Because it was sort of an ongoing experiment. Even after the IPO, we performed more experiments.
No, I mean the experiments that were conducted up through and including the time of the IPO.
I didn't make any conclusions.
Regarding the number of bead types?
Not that could be accurately decoded.
When was it that you first, if at all, reached any conclusions with respect to the number of bead types that could be accurately decoded as a result of the 768 decoding experiments?
It was after we performed additional experiments with, you know, new labeled sets.
And when?
Well, not new labeled sets, but different pooling that didn't include the mislabeled set. That was done in August.
August of 2000?
Yes.
After the IPO?
Yes.
Do you stand by that testimony, sir?
Yeah, we performed additional experiments.
And you couldn't reach any conclusions about the accuracy of the number of beads until the new experiments were conducted, after the IPO?
We... Not the exact accuracy, no. I couldn't vouch for every bead type. I wouldn't throw them into the master pool of 2,000 sequences we were selecting, no. I wasn't ready to do that.
In fact, you testified at deposition you couldn't reach any conclusions about the number of bead types that could be accurately decoded until new experiments were done post-IPO.
I like to see the data repeated, so with one experiment...
And your position on that point, you think was at least a reasonable position, don't you?
Yeah.
Back to 257, please. 257. Oh, my mistake. 354. Sorry. Get the board, please. I'm sorry. This is a memo you wrote, isn't that right?
That's right.
And again, this is the one where you state that the quality and accuracy of the data may have been compromised by the mix-up in the lot of dye from molecular probes.
That's correct.
You submitted this memo to Mark Chi, is that right?
That's correct.
Did Mark Chi ever say that he disagreed with anything you put in this memo?
I don't think we really discussed it after I submitted it to him.
Did he ever come back to you and say that he disagreed with any of your conclusions?
I don't recall...
Made in this memo?
I don't recall any disagreement.
Are you familiar with the term called proof of concept?
Yeah, I've heard the term.
You don't think very much of the term, do you?
Proof of concept?
Yeah.
We do proof-of-concept experiments. You have to do them carefully and with creativity.
Do you use the term proof-of-concept as a scientist?
Yeah.
You are familiar with the term?
Yeah, I've heard the term.
Do you understand the difference between a proof-of-concept experiment and a different type of experiment?
And what type of experiment?
Well, what... Strike that. You don't agree... Strike that. Do you conduct proof-of-concept experiments?
Yeah, and as I define proof of concept, yeah.
How do you define proof of concept?
Typically, a proof of concept experiment that we do is, especially with regard to arrays, is we want to demonstrate, like, for instance, the decoding of several thousand sequences, but we only have the resources or the reagents to generate, say, several dozen sequences. So... You devise an experiment that can mimic the complexity of a large-scale experiment, yet with fewer reagents, such that you can infer if that small proof-of-concept experiment works, you can infer that you can actually do the much larger experiment, more encompassing experiment, something like that.
Well, can you explain to me? Let me read some deposition testimony you gave about proof-of-concept. I would like you to explain that testimony to us. Beginning at page 110, line 25. If or in about May of 2000, you were assigned a 90-day goal, and that is, within 90 days of being assigned these goals, you were to show experimental feasibility of binary oligo encoding with 2 to the 12th power in codes, would you have agreed that was a reasonable and attainable goal? And your answer is 2 to the 12th. Can you tell me what that number is? 2 to the 6th is, and I say, I believe it's over 4,000.
Over 4,000? If you had actually showed you could decode 4,000 things in 90 days with 4,000 reagents, that would be very difficult.
In fact, to your knowledge, has that ever been done at Illumina?
We have never actually decoded 4,000 different bead types simultaneously.
Nor have you shown proof of concept that you could do so.
I wouldn't say that.
Well, have you shown proof of concept?
What do you define as proof of concept?
Well, I thought that was a scientific term you might be familiar with. Demonstrate.
Either you do it or you don't.
What do you mean by—
That was simply in response to your definition as demonstrate. That was your definition of proof of concept.
You agree, strike that. Are you familiar with some work that Golly Steinberg did that relates to decoding or—
Yeah, I'm somewhat familiar with it.
You are familiar that there were some problems with the results of Golly Steinberg's experiments, aren't you?
I don't know if you call them problems. She showed sort of a basic proof of concept. But certainly there were issues with implementing it in our production manufacturing environment.
And in fact, what Golly Steinberg did at Illumina, that's never been accurately pursued by the company after she finished her experiments. Is that right?
I believe it's still being pursued or going to be pursued. Yeah, there's still interest in it.
There's still interest, but it's not being pursued today, is it?
I think we just haven't had the time to work on that aspect of it.
Let me ask you a few questions about Tony Zarnik. He was chief scientific officer when you started with Illumina.
Correct.
How did your job duties cause you to interact with Tony Zarnik at work, if at all?
Well, we would discuss experiments. We would have group meetings, chemistry, molecular biology, and we discussed some planned experiments. And so Tony was leading the chemistry group, so we would have interaction in those types of meetings.
From time to time, would Dr. Zarnik lead the discussions at those meetings?
Yeah. I mean, like, we had these Wednesday update meetings where we'd sort of update the company about what we'd been doing the past week. And that was passed. The leadership of that meeting was passed among the senior staff, including Tony Zarnik.
In addition to being chief scientific officer, Tony Zarnik also headed up chemistry.
Correct.
And you were in molecular biology?
That's correct.
Mr. Gunderson, Dr. Gunderson, did you ever observe Tony Zarnik or hear him say anything to cause divisiveness, tension between the two groups, molecular biology and chemistry?
There were always challenges. Tony would always challenge our group on various experiments. Yeah, I mean, there was definitely sort of a competition or it wasn't the most smoothly running interaction between the two groups.
Did Tony Zarnik ever make any negative or derogatory comments about other scientists?
I don't recall any particular comments at this time.
What is your observation of how Dr. Zarnik got along with other scientists at Illumina?
Well, I think he got along pretty well. He was cordial. I interacted very cordially with him. He sort of provided a lot of hospitality. And, you know, we would have fun together. Made it sort of a fun working environment.
And what were your observations on that same subject as to Mark Chi? How did he get along with other scientists?
Well, Mark Chi gets along. He's very opinionated and has a strong opinion on subjects. So by necessity, that would cause more friction and arguments. And he was more serious, of course, very serious, very focused, worked really hard. That was just his nature.
Dr. Gunderson, have you ever made any complaints about Mark Chi to Human Resources?
Objection. Relevance, Your Honor.
In terms of morale and how he interacted with employees at work.
352.
Hearsay sustained.
Can we establish who, if anyone, Judge, may have been responsible for the alleged morale problems?
I think I've already made rulings on this and ruled out that type of evidence.
What is your current job title?
Principal Scientist.
What was your job title at the time I took your deposition?
Associate Director.
So you've been demoted since the time of your deposition?
No, I've been promoted.
That's a promotion?
Correct.
Did Mark Chi ever talk to you about your deposition testimony you gave in this case?
No, we didn't really discuss my deposition.
Ever?
I can't recall discussing it.
Did you ever tell any scientist at Illumina that Mark Chi was unhappy with your deposition testimony?
I never...
Objection. Hearsay, Your Honor.
I didn't know he was unhappy.
Hold on. Repeat the question.
Did you ever tell any scientist at Illumina that Mark Chi was unhappy with your deposition testimony in this case?
No, I didn't. I was unaware that he was unhappy with it.
Nothing further at this time, Judge.